Welcome to episode 17 of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. This time I'm talking to June Hughes, University Secretary and Registrar at the University of Derby. We hear all about June's higher education history, which has been spent unusually at just one institution, her current one. Derby has changed hugely in the time June has been there, and during that period she's fulfilled most of the core administrative roles you could imagine. We discuss how that broad experience and institutional knowledge has undoubtedly helped support and shape what has been a really positive and collaborative response by June's colleagues to the pandemic challenges. Maintaining a compassionate outlook, coping with extended periods on Teams, and planning for the various scenarios which might play out this autumn are all explored, together with the financial issues facing institutions at the moment. Finally, although it's acknowledged that there may be mergers ahead in other parts of the sector, voluntary or otherwise, and that there are big clouds on the horizon, the outlook in the long term remains positive, and June, for one, is optimistic about the future, despite the current challenges. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. And this time it's my enormous pleasure to introduce June Hughes. June is Registrar, I'm going to get a title wrong, Registrar and Secretary, I'm guessing now actually, at the University of Derby. Hello June. June, to start off with, do tell me what your exact title is and how you ended up in that position at the University of Derby. What was your career trajectory to get you there?
Hi Paul, and good to talk to you. Yeah, my title is University Secretary and Registrar actually.
I got it wrong.
That's okay. Fine. That's absolutely fine. how did I get to that position? Well, unusually, I've been in one institution since 1987.
Wow.
So the whole of my career, higher education career, has been at one institution. Where was I? I did have a life prior to that. I spent 6 years in a building society, and probably that's where I got the grounding for structured, if you like, training, financial insight and management. And then I spent 2 to 3 years in retail as an office manager at the time. And that taught me resilience. It taught me fast pace, fast moving, changing demands, etc. But at the same time that I'd moved into those roles, I'd taken the Institute of Chartered Secretaries and Administrators programme. And so I was looking for a job opportunity that used that qualification. And an opportunity came up at what was the local College of Higher Education, which was Derbyshire College of Higher Education, which I joined in 1987 as a faculty admin officer, actually. And so my career over 30 years has seen a change from College of Higher Education to a university in 1992 with the Higher Education Act. We were the first, actually, College of Higher Education to gain university status, and obviously, since then, massive growth and change in sector. And my role at the university has probably changed every 2 to 3 years as a result of that. And I would say that for me, the being at one institution for so long, I think is, you know, highly unusual. The thing that's kept my perspective and my professional update has been connections with external professional bodies. AUA was very important to me in the early days, and then of course AHUA and colleagues and networks there. So started as faculty admin officer, moved into central registry and an admissions post, then examinations and research through to assistant registrar, then academic registrar, then registrar, and then 4 or 5 years ago picked up the university secretary role.
Wow.
So this is how I've got to where I am, and it's been a fantastic journey.
So it is a classic old school generalist trajectory, except unusual, and it's all within one institution. Because I think that is pretty unusual these days. I suspect it was, you know, more commonplace, you know, 40 years ago. But to stay there for that length of time is remarkable, and to see that amount of change within one institution as well. It's a very different place, I imagine, when you joined in 1987.
Oh, absolutely incredible. Yeah, I think we had 4,000 students The majority of them were part-time with local engineering, Rolls-Royce, as you would imagine, and business. So we had a large part-time provision, but small degree provisions validated through CNAA, if you remember CNAA.
Oh, I do remember CNAA. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes.
And a couple validated by the University of Nottingham as well, as it happens.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
BEd, as it was, the teaching qualification and a combined studies programme. But then, of course, post 92, it exploded. I mean, the sector exploded with growth. Is it, you know, the removal of the binary divide? And yeah, it was fantastic to be part of that growth and journey. And we're in another phase of HE now when, you know, it's a pattern that is ever changing. And that's what's kept me at the university for so long, because I enjoy the role, I enjoy the post, and I love working in higher education.
So you're right. And things have changed remarkably over that, 30 or so year period. And I mean, it sounds a bit cliched to say, you know, where we are now is unprecedented. In a sense, everything is unprecedented in higher education. But I don't think in universities as in the rest of the country, we've ever seen anything like the recent period since the the pandemic and the lockdown and the gradual unlocking down of things. I mean, it's felt completely different. How's Derby responded to that challenge?
Very well, I would say. The staff were brilliant at the point of lockdown and the planning prior to lockdown, with the emphasis of getting content online for students for that last 2 to 3 weeks. In the first few weeks of lockdown, excellent support for students. Staff were adjusting very quickly to home working. It was great. It was that feeling of all in it together, all trying to support the students through to the examinations and assessment. Mm. I think the sector's been at its best in that regard, and certainly at the University of Derby, the staff have. I think the longer it's gone on, the harder it's got, both because people are getting quite tired. Traditionally, this time of the year, when it's through assessment boards, examinations, and you're starting to think about a break before we prepare for the next academic year,
yeah.
It's just, there's no let up. It's intense. The lockdown period, although we adjusted very quickly, and staff have been brilliant, very innovative. Things have changed and ideas have come forward to do things differently, which in a matter of weeks would have taken months or years previously to do. Now is the hard part, and that's returning to campus in September. And, you know, the volume of time of planning and preparing and communication and looking after staff and looking after students is just, yeah, incredible.
I mean, I've witnessed similar things with the way people have gone above and beyond over the past few months, and it has been quite extraordinary. And as you say, you know, really quite exhausting for lots of people. But I think that, you know, the thing that I am anxious about is kind of getting back to that rhythm of academic life. You know, the kind of academic calendar is one that has natural peaks and troughs in it, which enable you to work very, very intensely for a period of time, but and then allow periods for, you know, recovery and reflection, as it were, so that people don't, you know, kind of work flat out and then get burned out. But I struggled to see that returning in quite the same way. I mean, it seems so far away getting back to that cycle. I'm struggling to see what the new pattern will actually be that won't be just so challenging. It's just, you know, it's just horrible for staff and students alike.
It is tough. I mean, we last week were in meetings with delivering our new educational model for all the staff. So we talked it through so they understand it. And we're doing our best to try and ensure students are getting some face-to-face teaching contact, probably 3 to 4 hours per week. Right. And then the additional on-campus experience of access to libraries or applied sessions, working with other students, extracurricular activity. But of course, the blended learning part, the digital part of that learning, staff have also got to get themselves up to speed with transferring the content, carrying through that work. And there are sessions between now right through until September for staff to undertake online to help them with that. Well, that's great, but they've got to take some downtime.
Yeah.
I log on at, well, it's 7:30 in the morning, and there are some days I feel glued to Teams through till about 6 o'clock in the evening. And, you feel you've got to do that because there's so much that we need to talk through, work through, make decisions on, communicate. But it is quite an exhausting way of working.
Yeah.
And a lot of the staff feel that too. And of course, there's the whole home working environment, which the other thing's quite interesting is we've the VC's done her core brief, has maintained those through the period. And we had one last week and with the senior leaders, and you get the Q&As come in. And I get a sense that quite a lot of the staff are nervous about coming back on campus.
Yeah.
It's polarised. There are some that are itching to get back and want to get into the routine and the feel of it. Others who are feeling quite ill at ease because of the health and safety requirements. So it's not going to be easy. However, we believe got some good frameworks of plans in place. Difficulty is things change by the day.
absolutely right. I completely share your interpretation of that kind of polarization of colleagues' views on returning or not. There are some who are just absolutely desperate to get in, and there's some really, really anxious about it. And both I can entirely understand. But we are going to have to get back to a position before too long now where most people are going to be at work most of the time, unless there's a good health reason why they can't be. And that is going to feel very, very different from how it's been for the past few months. But we can't do all the things that we are planning for the autumn without quite a lot of people around. And you just can't do it, can you?
No, and the senior team at Derby are starting to go on campus to see each other face to face with the social distancing. But yeah, it's good to see that through UCAS and deferrals and information, the student recruitment's still looking positive, I think. Some of the initial fears aren't there as much, and who knows, that's the big unknown, isn't it? But to get ourselves prepared to get those students on campus and into the city as well. And that's an important facet. We had about 400 students who stayed in Derby post-lockdown in our halls of residence. And many universities had more than that, yeah. I know. But getting the students back into the local economy is going to be quite important. That takes staff. Our student residency staff have been working throughout lockdown, our security staff have, portering staff, research students have been in, but it's gradually building that up so that by the time we get to September we're in a reasonable position. And I think probably for us through September it won't be 100% of people 100% of time on campus, clearly. But we're going to have, we've repurposed some of our spaces for teaching to give priority to students. And it means that staff have got touchdown spaces, which is going to be an interesting challenge.
What is a touchdown space, June? Sorry.
Okay, touchdown space. So identify some space in a building which isn't the staff offices that they've had previously, because we've got some open plan staff offices for academics. We've repurposed those. But identifying perhaps where the estates team were, which is a recently refurbished building, which college staff can come together and hot desk. Obviously with the cleaning regime in place to enable that to happen. So we've got all sorts of change taking place in that first semester. So, however, when we look forward, and this is the thing, isn't it, that everybody said, some of the behaviours and patterns of work that the pandemic has changed and influenced, how do we take the best of that going forwards? And it's about trying out some of that activity. But we're looking at confirmation and clearing, which is August. We'll have an activity on site with all the required health and safety, and as that kind of glide path into return to campus in September. The only thing that I worry about is local lockdown. And any spike in R rates, infection rates, as Leicester has experienced. I think if that happens in any kind of city in the run-up to September, that would be tough. That would be tough to manage. So that's one of my biggest concerns.
I mean, I absolutely share that. And, you know, part of the planning has to be, you know, what happens if we do have that kind of local outbreak. And, you know, we're used to dealing with it in, you know, particularly in halls of residence around, you know, certain infectious diseases. But this is a class apart, really. And, you know, it will have consequences for the whole of campus as opposed to, you know, potentially just one hall, which is kind of the way it's happened in the past. What about the, you rightly point out the, huge importance for the economy of the city of these students coming back and starting to spend money to help get the economy going again. Have you sensed any anxiety in local communities about students, you know, coming from far and wide, you know, to form new households in neighbourhoods, and, you know, residents feeling a bit anxious about that?
Not at the resident level, but to be honest, Paul, I think it's probably a little bit too far out still. I know we're in July, but I think that will start to hit home probably in the August period as student results or places are confirmed and it becomes real. As other universities, you know, we're working with our city, county resilience and planning groups because they do want students back in the city, but it's all about, you know, what's that going to do? It's going to help the economy, but nobody wants the infection rate to be affected. So it's a fine balance. And I think working with the agencies across the city is the way in which we can manage that as effectively as we can, to be honest. And, you know, the whole economy stroke country has got to try and get back to some kind of normal. Whatever that means going forwards, you know, because we've just got to get going again. And it's good that students appear keen to take up the places. And we're all planning for, you know, plan A. Is it 1 meter plus social distancing? That's what we're working on at the moment. What happens if there's a lockdown? How would we respond to that? You know, what happens if there's outbreak of infection in halls? So I think we're all planning for those eventualities, but it is quite tough because there's a lot of them. There's a lot of scenarios. There's a lot of scenarios to plan for.
There certainly are. And one of the things, going back to your earliest comments, I do think that having the experience and knowledge of dealing with lots of different things in university life over the years, such as, you know, you've got from your various roles and, you know, people in your position around the sector have got, that kind of knowledge about, you know, responding to different circumstances based on experience, even though it's a completely novel scenario, is actually rather helpful, because no matter, you know, what the pandemic throws at us, actually one way or another we've seen something somewhere like it before, and you kind of know how to do certain aspects of stuff, even if you can't do everything that is needed. You kind of know some of the elements that go to form the jigsaw of the total response, which, you know, when you get the turnover that we do get, you know, often in professional services in particular, having that element of consistency and you know, historical knowledge is actually really important at times like these in any kind of crisis, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree, actually, Paul. I think, you know, the role that we've got, or I've got as university secretary and registrar, is pan-university, and it's part of the top team. And through different phases of developments or difficult periods or crises, you do bring to bear that knowledge of how to collaborate right across the university to get teams working together effectively. And that same principal approach works. I mean, I've been leading the business continuity group at the university, and, you know, it is a really can-do attitude. You know, there are sometimes I can recall back at base in periods where it was stable, wanting to get people to make decisions over tricky issues. You know, you'd reach an impasse and it would take a number of meetings to resolve. People realise we haven't got that time or luxury. So it puts a different perspective. But yeah, I think if you're used to bringing professional teams together with the academic teams, that's where actually through the pandemic, I would say there's been an enjoyable part of, if I can.
Enjoyable part of the pandemic?
Yeah. In terms of the way people have come together as one team, that's been good to see. And it's building on that. And as you say, in the roles that we've got at university level, you're in a privileged position to be able to influence that and make decisions and be party to those decisions, but also to keep that compassionate kind of perspective as well with staff and staff wellbeing and students.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. What about then, I mean, thinking about the kind of bigger picture, you know, because part of the thing that we've got to be concerned with, and, you know, and indeed, you know, kind of governing bodies have got to be concerned with, is the kind of long term future of our institutions. And, you know, these feel like, you know, we talked about the uncertainty of student recruitment, and okay, you know, in the middle of July at the moment, it's looking all right. But the proof is when they actually arrive. But in terms of your thinking about the long-term future of your university, have you, you know, had to identify significant savings? Are you being cautious in terms of what you think, you know, government might help with financially? What's your institutional thinking on that?
Yeah, we are being relatively cautious, and yes, we're looking for savings, probably in the region of £20 million plus for the next financial year, 2021. We had our governing body, not last week, the week before, we've not signed off the budget yet for 2021. We'll do that when we know the recruitment figures, and I think that's common in the sector. We're also building within that figure the reserves to have to continue to invest in the future. And that's our long-term perspective with the governing body, you're saying, you know, the 3 to 5 year plan, because we've got a strategic framework through to 2030. Don't let it knock you off track, because, you know, we need to just focus on that midterm. And the scenario planning we've done for September, 2 or 3 different scenarios require that level of savings across the university, which all colleges and departments have had to contribute to. We've got further to go, and it depends whether the recruitment holds up to one or other of those scenarios as to whether we need to cut deeper. I hope not, but, you know, we're a university of £200 million turnover, so that is at least a 10%, 10 to 15% saving within one financial year.
Yeah.
And every university's got to keep an eye on the cash flow and the number of liquidity days, and it's good the student loan company are splitting the payments to us in a slightly different way, but even in our pattern we can predict a period where it starts to get sticky through the spring next year, but let's hope recruitment's positive and we get higher than each of the scenarios that we're looking at the moment. So yeah, we've definitely got our eye on the medium term. And, you know, the sector, I think it was the IFS report, was it 2 weeks ago, identified 13 universities who, you know, were predicted really challenging financial times in the next 18 months, 2 years. So it's tough.
Yeah. I've been studiously avoiding speculating what those institutions are, but without thinking about who they might be, I mean, what do you think about the kind of bigger picture for the sector as a whole? I mean, every time there's any kind of crisis, people do talk about, you know, mergers and closures and universities going bust, etc. And this time is no different. But it does feel a bit more feasible, real. Or at least a bit more, you know, likely now, and not just because the IFS are predicting it, because we know the financial challenges we're facing. So we know that other people might be, you know, facing even more severe challenges.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's right or wrong, I think the reality is that's what the government and OFS will look at. I mean, Michael Barber said 12 months or so ago now, the OFS will not bail out an institution. I think it depends on geography, where those institutions are, and the intensity of provision in the locality as to what happens. I think it's inevitable that there will be some mergers, but forced mergers are never a good thing, are they?
No.
But you don't
get many voluntary ones.
No, you don't. I think it's inevitable, but it will depend on geography and region. You know, you can imagine if there was some vulnerability, northwest Manchester way, the government would look at it and say, well, you know, isn't there enough provision in that region already? How can the existing institutions share that, whichever it is, you know, A and other institutions, portfolio provision, etc. But it's tough. Every institution's got their own unique impact that they have in their local community, and so on. So it's not an easy one. I mean, fortunately, you know, Derby, we're East Midlands, so we've got Nottingham, NTU, and DMU, Leicester, Loughborough's close neighbours and competitors. But we are the only university in the city and the county. And again, just looking at a positive through this difficult period, we've been expanding our work in research and KTPs, and I think we've had more bids submitted in the last 12 to 14 weeks than we've had in the previous 12 months. With people being, you know, research bids or knowledge transfer partnership submissions, and that bodes well for our future, and I hope other universities are doing that as well. And yeah, you know, that's the impact that universities have in their region, and that will be one of the deciding factors if an institution is struggling.
Yeah, but I think, you know, to go back to our early discussion, I mean, I think that, you know, it has been an incredibly challenging time for universities, but I'm, you know, remain filled with a kind of a sense of optimism about the future, is that no matter how tough things get, universities are extraordinarily resilient places with, you know, resilient and inventive and creative staff who, you know, find ways to do things and make things work. And that's been, a real positive from all of the challenges. And I think it bodes well for our sector for the future. Yes, there'll be difficulties ahead, but actually I think we'll continue to thrive once we're through this immediate most difficult of challenges.
Yeah, and you know, universities have proven that over the decades, over the centuries, that we are resilient. And you would hope that, you know, the press around universities will end up more positive because of the medical research. You would hope, wouldn't you?
And you would hope that.
Yeah, of the graduates that were delivered to the economy across all different ranges. I do think UUK have been very positive through this period in working with government and so forth. So, I mean, I'm optimistic. It's been an awful, tragic period for many people and many families, but I'm optimistic that we'll get ourselves up and running again in September, I think there'll be one or two bumps in the road. I don't think we'll get back to anywhere near normal for 12 months or more. I guess it depends on a vaccine, ultimately. But we'll adapt. You know, people will adapt, universities will adapt, and students, I believe, still want to come and get that experience, even if that experience is not as traditional as it used to be.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, June, it's been a real pleasure and a delight to talk to you, and thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Paul.
That's all then from University Registrars Talking About Stuff this time. There'll be plenty more along in due course, and if you can't wait, then please do check out the Registrarism blog on wonky.com, where you'll find lots of higher education comment and fun and games. Until next time.